News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Well, he trekked Israel all alone, and he found himself. We're going to meet this unusual man on the show today, and you can call in with any comments or questions that you may have for him and this amazing story. We're going to be talking to somebody who went through a traumatic time in his life. We all have gone through difficult things. How he healed himself is unique. And he did it by trekking the land of Israel. Amazing story. He wrote a book about it. You can get it, too, if you like. We'll give out details at the end of the show. I'll ask him for details. And it's going to be, it was life-changing for him. I hope that after listening to this interview, it will be life-changing for you as well. The Israel National Trail, which is what he hiked, is something that I've heard people say is on their bucket list. I'd love to do the Israel National Trail. Oh, I want to do that. I've heard people say that. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, somebody was telling me how they wanted to do it. Me, I don't like hiking, only in the mall. but other people who are much more adventurous in that sense have done it or want to do it. And we're going to hear the story of someone who did do it and how he found himself, how he healed himself from the turmoil that he was going through in his life at that time. So really exciting things. And we'll talk about some news as well if we have time. If you want, you can, again, call into the show. You can also join me in the chat room. So I encourage you to do that. I want to say hi to everybody who's listening in from all over the world, from the United States, Israel, Canada, Australia, the Netherlands, France, Panama, et cetera, et cetera. It's great to have you all here. And join me in the chat room. It's the orange button on the player. It's a lot of fun to listen to the show with people from all over the world, see what they're saying, their thoughts, putting in your two cents as well. And if you have any questions, sometimes I can go there and look, and I can even ask them the show for you. So don't be shy. Join us in the chat room. It's just such a nice experience to do so. All right. We'll be right back, everybody. Don't go anywhere. This is going to be a unique show with a unique man.
I'm Jono Vandoor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind,
every Thursday.
All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on Israel News Talk Radio. And we're going to be talking with a very unusual man, someone who packed it up and went on a journey where he found himself. We have as our guest Aryeh Green. He is the author of a new book, My Israel Trail, Finding Peace in the Land of Milk and Honey. He's director emeritus and former head of Media Central, which is a Jerusalem-based project of honest reporting. He's also the former senior advisor to Natan Sharansky in the Israeli Prime Minister's office, and he's a recognized expert in Middle East history and current affairs, and he's a leading advocate for freedom and democracy in the region. And you can visit his website at myisraeltrail.com. Welcome to the show, Aryeh Green.
Thanks so much, Tamar. Good morning.
So all this week on my shows, I've been talking about the amazing strides that Israel has made. We just celebrated 70 years of independence. I talked about the miracles that we're seeing here and the importance of living in Israel. Now, you trekked Israel from top to bottom, and on the way, you also found yourself. So tell us about this amazing country and the trek that you made.
Well, I mean, that's why I wrote a book. I don't know if I can tell you in 3.5 minutes all about the country and the experience. But there's no question the way that you introduced it and this whole season of celebrating 70 years of Israel's independence, it sets an incredible background for what was a tremendously transformative experience for me. You know, I grew up in California, and I always loved hiking in the Sierra Nevadas and the Pacific Crest Trail and the coastal range. And there are beautiful hikes, of course, all over the world. Nothing compares to walking as a Jew in our ancestral homeland, connecting with the land, with our country, with our people, with our history. And obviously I can give you some examples of just stumbling across historical sites, which you just stand there and say, wait a minute, is that possible? I'll give you an example. Up in the Galilee, and I just want to start out with, and we probably will end by my extending an invitation to all of your listeners to hike. Come hike the Israel Trail for a day or a week or the entire length of it. It took me 8 weeks, but some people have done it over the course of 3 months, and others have done it faster. But when I was in the fifth week of the trail up in the Galilee, in the Galil, right off the coast of, right off the border with Lebanon, I was hiking through the Dishon Valley and forest, and I came across a small blue tomb, a gravesite with a little fence around it. And I saw that it said in Hebrew, Kever Yeshayahu ben Amoz. And I didn't really pay it much attention, but I stopped for a break under the shade of a tree.
Can you translate that for our listeners?
I'm absolutely going to. All of a sudden, I was looking at this Hebrew that said Yeshayahu ben Amoz, and I thought, wait a minute, Yeshayahu, isn't that Isaiah? Is Yeshayahu ben Amoz, is Isaiah ben Amoz the Isaiah? Is this the prophet of, you know, swords and plowshares and the lamb lying down with the lion and the like? And I asked some fellow trekkers who were there just for a day, who were visiting the grave, some Hasidim from Breslov, and they confirmed. I'm sitting here at the cave of the prophet Isaiah in the middle of the northern Galilee and thinking to myself, there's not even a road that leads to this amazing historical site connecting me to my people and our history and our land. Just phenomenal.
Do you need to know the Bible in order to make this trek?
Well, I wouldn't say you need to know the Bible, because the trek itself is exhilarating in and of itself. Second of all, there's a lot of information to be had even while you're on it. And third of all, the historical and the natural vista and landscape are pretty sometimes self-explanatory. I mean, if you are hiking on or near the Sea of the Galilee, the Kinneret, for instance, you don't have to know your Bible to know this is where Jesus walked and apparently had a few experiences regarding fish and other experiences. So you don't really need to know, but it's a good thing in general in touring Israel, I find. If you have some familiarity with the biblical narrative, then the enjoyment is augmented and the experience is a lot more of a spiritual experience as well as just the physical enjoyment of the beauty. And by the way, even if you know your biblical history, some things are a bit confusing. Just as one example, after the trek, I looked up where the tomb of Isaiah is, and there's some historical controversy or discussion as to whether or not he was really buried there in the Galilee, or whether or not perhaps he's buried in the Kidron Valley in Jerusalem. And it almost doesn't matter, because the connection is made because of our people's history in this land, and in 3,500 years of history, there are bound to be a few interesting discussions as to what actually happened where. But you still make that connection because we know Isaiah as a man and as a prophet existed and was here, and whether it was specifically in that area of the forest in the Galilee or elsewhere, the connection is still made, and it's very powerful.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever done anything like this before? I mean, you said you went hiking and when you lived in California, but to actually go away for days and days and days, have you ever done anything like that before?
Well, no, as you're right. I said I'd hiked. I think the longest hike I ever took, maybe when I was a camper at Sky Lake Yosemite Camp, was a 3-day, 2-night overnight. So that was a backpack, and it was obviously fun and a challenge. But no, I have and has never done this kind of a both physical or emotional challenge, and there was a reason I did it. I was out on the trail 6 weeks after giving my wife the divorce, the divorce papers, as we do in Jewish tradition. And this was a divorce that I hadn't looked for. I had agreed to it as a kind of, the last gesture of love that that I could give to my former wife. And yet it was a traumatic experience for me, and it was devastating. I turned my life upside down, and I had always wanted to hike the trail. I had friends and children of friends and friends of my children who had hiked the trail. I'd even joined a few of them for a day here and there just for fun. And it was something that I had always thought about doing. But it was only when the divorce came through that I basically decided, okay, I'm going to do this. And 6 weeks after the divorce, as I say, I set out on this 8-week, 42-day trek, all alone, by the way, completely alone, to over 1,000 kilometers, about 600 miles, 42 days of hiking with a 50-pound pack on my back. and that was, yeah, go ahead.
How did you even know what to put in your pack? You've never done this before. How did you even know what to put in?
Well, I don't know if you've read the book Wild by Cheryl Strayed or seen the movie, but there's a scene in there where she's actually already out on the trail, also having gone out with literally no preparation, and another hiker literally starts casting aside half of the things she packed in her back. And in her backpack. I had a similar situation and experience, but I did it before I went out on the trek. As I say, I'd done backpacking before, so I had some ideas, and I read up and talked to some friends, but then I had a friend, Michal, actually the daughter of a friend here in the neighborhood, who had just come back from hiking the Shvil, the trail herself, and she literally went through my pack and did the same thing, threw out things that I didn't need. Said I had too many of this and not enough of that, and therefore I was pretty well prepared when I went out, although I obviously learned a few lessons along the way of things that I should have brought, or things that I didn't need, or things I was very glad I did bring, like the rope that my son, who was a combat soldier in the IDF, gave me, that he had used when he was in the IDF, and I threw it in the top of the pack thinking, what the heck, nice of him to give it to me. And one day when I was climbing down a cliff, I couldn't figure out how to get my backpack down this cliff because I didn't want to fall and kill myself, and there wasn't enough room for me to squeeze it through a crack in the cliff. And I remembered the rope that he had given me, which is light but very, very strong, and I used it to lower the pack down about 20 meters, around 60 feet down the side of a cliff. You learn as you go along the way.
And what about water? I mean, are there like water stations along the way where you can refill your bottles or what?
Well, you know, it's funny. You ask that with a smile, and the truth is there are a few, but not in the places where you really need them. The Mikorot, the Israel National Water Carrier, has set up more in the center and the north of the country a few pumps and water fountains, literally just like you say, water station, which is a lovely gesture that they've made specifically for hikers on Shvi Yisrael, on the Israel Trail. But down in the south, the 3 weeks I did in the south between Eilat and, let's say, Arad, there actually aren't any such water stations. There's no water flowing through the desert, even in the water pipes. And so I did actually have to bury water and other supplies in a few locations, and I paid some Jeep tour guides also to do the same and to deliver water or other supplies literally in the middle of the desert.
Okay, we need to stop here and take a break. When we get back, I'm going to be asking Aryeh about simple things like how do you go to the bathroom over there and what kind of physical shape do you need to be in? Can someone in their 60s, 70s do this trail? All this is coming up. We'll be right back as we learn lessons from trekking the land of Israel, a land that heals.
Hi, everyone. This is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and we're speaking with Aryeh Green. He trekked Israel alone, and he found himself. He trekked the land of Israel, which is, you know, the land of Israel is healing in so many ways. And I want to find out a little bit about the little details that a lot of people are embarrassed to ask, but I'm not. That's what I'm going to start with. Aryeh, you're traveling by yourself. You have your backpack. I'm sure you've got some toilet paper in there. You have to go to the bathroom. How do you do that? Where do you go to the bathroom?
I love it, Tamar. Yeah, the details are actually sometimes fun. You didn't know that I had actually a funny answer to this, but I think we'll just leave it to the listener's imagination of anyone who's been out in the field or on a hike knows that you find a tree and take care of business. What's interesting within our context of the world of halacha, of Jewish law, is we even have some guidelines for what to do. And our forebears, the Israelites, as they gathered through the desert, were told in the Torah that they have to have a shovel with them in order to make sure that they take care of what they leave behind. I had one experience which I won't go into detail, but I do describe actually in the book in a few sentences where I learned a good lesson on the first night of the trail about trying to stay in from the cold and avoid having to go out and take care of business and leave your tent. And I learned a good lesson about how it sometimes makes sense to go ahead and leave your tent rather than trying to take care of things just standing there at the entrance of the tent.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
Okay. That's funny. All right. Let me ask you about this other detail. What about phone reception? What happens if all of a sudden, God forbid, you fall and you break your leg and you can't move? I mean, I assume you had a cell phone with you, but is there reception everywhere? I mean, what do you do in a case like that? Do you make preparations on, you know, what happens if?
Well, again, it's funny. You're asking questions, which I don't think you even know because we didn't discuss it beforehand, have stories behind them. But the answer is yes, I had a cell phone, and most people do. And no, there is not reception in many areas, especially in those first few weeks down in the south in the desert, the Negev. The answer to the second part of your question is you can't do anything about it. You basically understand that you're out there on your own, and if something happens, you hope somebody might come by and stumble across you if you fall or break an ankle or something. I had a friend, or have a friend, Hadass, who is, let's just call her a warrior, who was very concerned about that, and so I arranged really for her and maybe a few other friends a kind of system where I sent a message to my daughter who was at home, my daughter Moria, who at that point was living at home after the army. And I sent a message to her every other night saying I'm okay, and here's where I am, and here's my plan for the next day. And I tried to send it every night. If I had reception, sometimes I had to climb to the top of a a hill in order to get reception. And the deal was that if she didn't hear from me one night, that was okay. Just meant I didn't get reception. If she didn't hear from me for two nights, then they were, and then Hadass was allowed to call the emergency services. And so once or twice I actually sent messages with people who passed me on the trail and asked them to send a message to Moriah saying they'd seen me and I was all right, so that they at least knew that at that last point of sight I was seen.
Okay, so you had check-in points and times. Let me ask you this. Did you ever meet anybody on the trail? Like you're walking and someone's walking towards you and you go, hey, hey.
Well, yes, without question. When I was writing the book, I went over my journal entries, and I was actually surprised to see that out of the 42 days that I hiked, and as I said, I did the hike all alone, but out of the 42 days, I actually didn't see a single soul from morning to night for 12 of those days. So 12 days, I had no interaction with other human beings at all. For all the other days, then, yeah, I would find somebody walking towards me on the trail. You might say hello, have a little chat. Every now and then, I met it with somebody where there was some connection. I met a fellow named Barry Leff, who turns out was hiking the trail in different segments, a week here or a few days there. And he was a friend of a friend, a good friend of a friend. In fact, so much so that I met him when he finished his trail down in Eilat a couple of years ago. And I did actually walk for two of the days out of the 42. I happened to meet up with somebody, a stranger, who became a friend, or as the saying goes, strangers are only friends you haven't met yet, and walked with them for the day. And that was very pleasurable, but that only happened twice.
Wow. So I hope you carried a ball with you named Wilson when you were going for 12 days without seeing a single soul. Let me ask you this. Wild animals. Did you ever come across any wild animals?
Yeah, well, I laughed when you said that. So I just want to say that I did not have a ball with me. But what I did have was the trail sign, the three colors of the trail sign, which tells you you're actually on the trail on the right path, which are kind of orange and brown stripe for the desert and a white stripe for the snow and the Hermon in the north and a blue stripe in the middle for Israel. And I did talk to the trail sign when I would get lost, which happened dozens of times over the course of the trek. And I would find the trail sign. I would say out loud, oh, there you are. Like it's an old friend. So that's my Wilson comparison.
Okay, I was just going to ask you that if you ever got lost. What about wild animals? You ever come across any?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, birds, bugs, bees, beetles, etc., and mice and snakes, that's kind of usual. But I also had a number of experiences one evening hiking where I was, I miscalculated and I hiked into the night. I basically stumbled across a bobcat, which was kind of like a small tiger, like, at least in my mind, the size of a large dog. The other really interesting experience I had was being surrounded by dozens of jackals. Another nighttime experience where I had miscalculated, this time in the forest of Meitar. And that was, well, disconcerting to say the least. Not that jackals are necessarily threatening to human beings, but being surrounded by more than three dozen pairs of red eyes in the dark, lost in the middle of a forest, was not the most pleasurable high point of the trip.
Did you carry a gun?
I did not. No, in fact.
So, what did you have to defend yourself in case of an attack?
Well, your listeners should know, and I'm happy for you to know that there has never been a violent attack on Shul Yisrael on the Israel National
Trail. Always a first time. I'm a Jewish mother. I worry about these things.
Yeah, my friend Hadass would appreciate that comment. So the real danger, if there is any, on Shul Yisrael is carelessness and not making sure you have enough water or misstepping and falling and injury. There's really no danger of attack, not from wild animals or from other individuals. There are issues of theft. There have been many stories of people going to sleep and waking up and finding themselves without their backpack, or at least without their wallet or phone or camera,
wow,
especially in groups. And that's unfortunate, which is why you're told to, and most people do, keep their possessions on them in their sleeping bag or near to them and tied to them. Interestingly enough, we were talking about burying water, and I had an unpleasant experience of coming to a place where water had been placed for me and was gone. And fortunately, that was one of the situations where I had paid a tour guide, a Jeep guide, to do so. And he came out at 11 at night, because that's one of the reasons you pay a decent amount for to have that water dumped there, as if it anything goes wrong, they guarantee you will have water. So he came out at 11 at night, 3 hours in his Jeep, in order to deliver the water that wasn't there.
Unless you don't have phone reception and can't call the guy.
Yeah, well, that's I had to hike up for about 45 minutes to the top of a mountain in order to let him know that, and that was obviously also frustrating. But the point I was going to make is that the interesting thing also that I heard from the police who I spoke with at one point is that there are multiple cases of theft of possessions, and there are very few cases of theft of water or food supplies. It's almost like a desert code that you don't take somebody's water in the middle of the desert.
No, I'm just joking. Okay.
Oh, that's terrible.
I know, it's terrible.
I would never
say
that.
Okay. Wait, we only have another 2 minutes until the break, and I want to get this question in. Everybody knows the story of Kobe Mandel and his friends who went off just a few hundred meters from outside their home community, where wandering Arabs spotted them, kidnapped them, and beat them with heavy, sharp rocks to death so violently that they were unrecognizable when the police found them. Then there was Kate Wilson, who was hiking with her friend in the forest and were also kidnapped and stabbed to death, where Kate miraculously survived this attack. And you were traveling alone. You're saying that you didn't have a gun. Did you not fear being targeted by roaming Arabs?
Well, I understand the question, Tamar, and the answer is no. And the answer is partially because the Israel Trail itself is, of course, in Israel on the pre-49 armistice lines areas. So there's less of a danger of an actual terror attack because, unfortunately, the Arab terror attacks that we suffer so much from are often across that that armistice line in Judea and Samaria. I wasn't worried. I guess as a man hiking alone, I had some sense of confidence and knowing that there really wasn't a history of attacks on the Israel Trail itself. You're quite right. Kate Wilson comes to mind with her companion who was killed, which was in Israel proper. And of course, there have been attacks in Israel, but I wasn't worried about it. And my answer to that question is I will have to deal with that when I cross that barrier. I do own a gun for self-protection and to protect others, and I carry it, in my everyday life. But it just wasn't something that I felt was either necessary, nor really appropriate or possible while I was on the trail.
I think that you and I would disagree there, but okay. We're going to go to a break now. When we get back, we're going to hear about the lessons that REA learned and wants to teach us as well. So stay with us as we take a break. And by the way, you can call in with any questions that you have. Feel free to call into the show. We'll be right back.
Hello, I am Walter Bingham. If you want to hear the news behind the news and the true perspective on world affairs, then the Walter Bingham File is the program for you. We bring you interviews with the movers and shakers, political commentaries, and on-the-spot reports of events as they happen. All here every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Israel time, 9 a.m. Eastern time. And it's all archived on our website. Make it a date.
All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and we're speaking with Aryeh Green. He hiked the Israel Trail, the Israel National Trail, and his experiences are just amazing and unique. You're going to want to pick up his book and read it about his adventures and about his lessons as well. And Aryeh, let me start out with this before we go into your lessons learned about, what was the scariest thing that you ever experienced on the trail?
Well, the truth is there were a few scary experiences, almost being blown off a cliff on the Carbolet, the hardest day of the trek. But I think really the really most scary experience was when I lost the trail on the side of a cliff in Nahal Amud, going on the way down to the the lake, the Sea of the Galilee, the Kinneret. And I was literally on the side of a cliff on a trail that became more and more narrow. And I got to this point where I couldn't go any further. I couldn't turn around because if I turned one way, I would literally fall down maybe 30 feet, about 10 meters, onto some jagged rocks below. And I couldn't turn the other way because my pack would hit against the side of the cliff. And I panicked. I didn't know what to do. And thankfully, I had read Thomas Crum's book, Three Deep Breaths. And I took three deep breaths and slowly lowered my pack to the trail and retraced my steps and found where I had missed how the trail goes up with some handholds actually pounded into the rock to get back to the trail. And that was frightening, but it itself was a bit of an important kind of pivotal moment for me, because that's one of the lessons I learned, that sometimes you just have to stop. You have to lower your baggage, as it were, put down your baggage, recognize where you are, accept the fact, this is where I am, I've got to deal with it. And that was one of the lessons I actually learned, too, on that very frightening experience.
So when you say that there are handles on a rock, what shape do you have to be? Like, if you are in your 60s or 70s, and you can still walk, you can go to the bathroom by yourself, you can do all the things that you need to, but, like, would a person like that be able to do the trail?
Absolutely. There's no question that the majority of the hiking trails of the Israel National Trail are decently doable day trails, day hikes for anybody who's in decent shape. I mean, obviously, you have to be at least in average physical shape to be able to do 15 or 20 kilometers, even if just walking on the flat. Some of the trails are much harder and physically challenging, which, of course, every individual has to decide for themselves. But I met a couple, for instance. You asked people about meeting people along the way. I met a couple outside of Kibbutz Lahav in the Negev who were 75, and they were doing the trail for the third time, not all at once, but a few days at a time. And so I think as long as you're in decent physical shape, you certainly can do most of the trail relatively easily.
And the funniest thing that ever happened to you.
That's a quick one. I think the funniest thing on the trail was waking up one day in my tent in the Tzipori forest in the Galil, again, outside of the little town of Tzipori. Waking up in my tent and feeling like it was kind of like a light but ongoing earthquake, and opening the flap and finding myself surrounded by dozens of huge cows who had found their way to walk through this forest and literally almost had me for breakfast.
Wow. That's
both frightening and funny at the same time.
Did you take a picture?
Of course. There's a picture, I think, of that in my book. There are a number of pictures that found their way into the book.
All right. What was your aha moment?
Well, I describe in the book a particular segment of the hike in the Judean desert. And I think, although there were many aha moments, the lessons that I learned that I talk about in the book, reaching a sense of humility, and as I already mentioned, acceptance and gratitude for the amazing things in my life, my family and my ability to live here in Israel, etc. They were all the result of different aha moments. But one of the most important ones happened as I was walking through the Judean Desert National Reserve, which most people have never heard of. It's east of Arad in the northern Negev. It's Israel's largest nature reserve, and nobody's ever heard of it. And you know why? Because there's nothing there. When I say nothing tomorrow, I want to be explicit. In other areas of the desert, there's shrubs, there's ants, there's beetles, there's birds. Here in the Judean Desert, there is a vast expanse where I walked all day and saw nothing but rocks. And it was like a moonscape. And it was that day, and in a particular moment of that day, where understanding that I was trekking through the hills where our prophets and our forefathers had walked, that I was overwhelmed with a sense of humility and kind of connection to all of existence, as it were. And I felt like I had some sort of communion, if you will. Well, I don't mean to speak in too much hyperbole, but that still small voice that came at the mountain for Eliyahu at I guess it was Har Carmel, I felt something like that. And it was that connection with both God and my people and our history and the country that was transformative for me on that day to move me from a position of unhappiness and anger and the depth of my the devastating nature of the divorce and my sadness into a sense of purpose and understanding that I could move on with my life and that I had not just reason to live but much still to do with my life. And that was probably the most transformative moment, what you call an aha moment of the trek.
You talk about forgiveness in your book. And so many of us carry around anger and resentment towards people, relationships that we have. How do you forgive so you can better your life and move forward?
Well, obviously, in a 3.5 minute discussion like this, it's hard to give over wisdom of 3,500 years of Jewish tradition or greats like Elie Wiesel. Viktor Frankl, who wrote the book Man's Search for Meaning. But I think the easiest way of understanding that my understanding was after I'd reached a level of acceptance that this was my life and I needed to accept it and move on with it, and a level of gratitude for, as I said, my family and the privilege of building a faith-based home here in the land of our ancestors, the gratitude that I had for all the good things in my life and the acceptance that these are the cards I've been dealt, helped me to reach a level of forgiveness, whether the forgiveness of myself for mistakes I'd made or my former wife for her decision to leave or other things that were part and parcel of my suffering. And I think for most of us, meeting our challenges, whether we've been fired or the loss of a loved one or what have you, the acceptance of the situation we're in with a certain level of humility is something that gives us the ability to forgive others, especially within the context of appreciation for all the blessings that we've been given.
Any regrets, anything you would have changed, done differently?
Yeah, but I don't know if I want to go public with them. There are a few things that I would say I regret from the trek. One of them is I would have arranged things slightly differently in terms of the timing, because I went a few weeks earlier than the season restarts, so I had a number of days in the rain that I would have been happy to avoid. I would probably put a little bit more emotional pressure and blackmail on my children and friends to come join me for a day, because I missed that, and that would have added both to my pleasure and also I think theirs as well. I would have gone to writing my book much quicker. And it would have been easier if I had written more in my journal every day rather than just a few chicken scratches, scribbling exhausted at the end of the day. Oh, and I would have taken my guitar. I brought my guitar, a small guitar that I had bought specifically for this purpose. I took for the last 4 weeks of the trek in the northern region of the country. I would have taken it for the first 4 weeks, even though it would have been a hassle in the desert, because that was such an incredibly enjoyable and important element of the last half of the trek that I would have.
So you sang to the birds and the beetles.
I did. I sang to the stars, and I was crying in creek beds and composing songs in the Judean desert, and I sang to my future wife. I don't know if you got that far in the book, but I'm happy to give a little spoiler alert here. Some of the things that happened at the end of the
you know
the
what
trek.
don't say it. People will have to get your book. We're coming to the end of the interview, and in any case, I want people to know how to get it if they like this story and they're just want to go on an adventure without having to move from their couch. Then you can do so. Where do people get your book, and where do people contact you?
Well, I can be contacted through my website at www.myisraeltrail.com. I'm giving actually a number of talks around America in May and then again August and September. Happy to hear from others who'd like me to come and speak about the experience and the lessons learned. And you can get the book on Amazon. It officially comes out next week, but it's already available for sale.
So myisraeltrail.com, they can go there. You have contact as well if somebody wants to contact you. Maybe someone's interested. Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm going on the plane, on the trail. Okay, very good. You won't be hearing from me. I'm the person who likes to sit on the couch and read about other people's adventures.
Then I hope you'll enjoy it.
Not all the time. No, that's not true. I've had many adventures of my own, and God willing, many to come. Aryeh Green, it has been a pleasure to talk with you. You really actually, I have never thought about doing the Israel Trail. I've heard about it. People have told me they want to do it, but you have ignited something in me, a little bit of my adventure streak inside of me thinking, you know what? Maybe I'll put this on my bucket list. Maybe I'll do that.
I'd be delighted to meet you on the trail tomorrow. Just let me know when you decide to do it.
All right, great. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Aryeh Green, for being with us. And again, you can go to his website, myisraeltrail.com. That's where you can go to order the book and to contact Aryeh as well. Thank you again, Aryeh, for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure. Good morning and Chag Sameach. Thank you.
All right. And I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to contact me, Tamar, T-A-M-A-R, at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. It's been great doing the show. I had a good time, a better time than I expected. Really, really interesting. Thanks for being with us, everybody.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling from the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.